It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
But the Krell forgot one thing, it. Monsters, John. Monsters from the id.
There you go again, always blaming me for everything.
Go switch off!
Exterminate!
It's a trap!
This looks extraordinarily bad.
Commencing countdown T minus 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanny Show, episode 84.
Using our super advanced Roomba to sweep sexism under the rug.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Jen.
Okay, before we get to our topic, we should explain, as I did in the previous episode at the beginning, we are going to the proper numbers permanently forever. We are never changing.
Finally.
We could get to 10,000 and we will still say 10,001.
I really hope so.
Yeah, no, I'm not switching them again. I'm done. We are episode 84. So we will actually cross episode 100 this year.
Yay!
Which we're not going to do anything special whatsoever for that episode, so.
That's boring.
It is boring. Shut up.
Can't we have a party?
It's a podcast.
I'm just teasing. And I also realized that Roombas don't sweep, they vacuum.
Look, it was... The first word in our show is Skiffy, so it is a sweeping Roomba.
Sweeping. It is super advanced.
Like I said, it covers everything. Anyway, so yeah, so the numbers, we're at 84 now, and that's what the numbers are going to be. It'll be 85, yada, yada, yada. So our topic today actually just happened today. We originally were going to have Mike Hole on, but there was some scheduling flaw issue, so we're rescheduling. So we had sort of an impromptu topic, which was really perfect because the proverbial shit hit the fan at Tor.com today in what may be this year's gender veil.
Well, at least the first one.
The first
of
one.
The year.
I mean, like, we didn't even get, like, through the first month before.
That's pretty sad.
There were, before the comments got closed on this particular post, there were 133 comments. A good chunk of them by a fellow by the name of Tom Kratman, or Krotman. I'm assuming it's Kratman, but I want to put a U in there and say Krautman, just because it seems appropriate to call him a Kraut, but...
Let's not go there. He's at least a sexist douche nozzle.
Okay, we can go with the Patton Oswalt term, douche nozzle. Good. So anyway, so a little bit of context. Liz Bork, or is it Bork?
Burke, probably.
Is it Burke? Probably Burke. B-O-U-R-K-E. She's fairly popular on like Tor.com, and she recently stirred the pot a little bit when she wrote a scathing review of Michael Sullivan's book, Thief of Swords, I think. We're interviewing him. But anyway, she wrote a fairly scathing review and got a lot of crap for that. And then she wrote this on the 17th, before the 19th, when the comments were closed. The title of the piece is Admirals and Amazons, Women in Military Fiction. And she starts essentially talking about how there's not really a lot of non-Western women that are present.
Well, no, she actually, it's a double... edge sword. I mean, it's primarily about how there's not a lot of strong women in military science fiction.
Yeah.
And there are also not, if there are non-Western characters, they are still Westernized into the context of the military science fiction.
Sure. Okay. That's one way to put it. And then she talks about the lack of women and the way they've been presented fairly briefly. And her point didn't seem overall that it was about specifically like whether or not people agreed with her initial assessment, but really she ended her post with the following questions: was, is popular military SF more conservative in terms of gender and race than the rest of the genre? If it is, what factors make it that way? And if it's not, what have I been missing? And quite honestly, the comments did not even really address this overall.
Not at all. Primarily what you had were responses of, oh, but what about the woman in this book? As if pointing out the one or two female lead characters in military science fiction would somehow, you know, excerpt the entire field from the criticism that there aren't enough strong female characters. And it also specified that essentially women can't serve in the military.
Yeah, and we'll get to that in just a minute. I do want to talk about Burke, Liz Burke's. She made a couple points that I actually thought we might challenge.
Okay.
And not because I disagree with her central premise. I think she's right that there aren't a lot of positive portrayals of women in military SF, generally speaking. And by military SF, I'm not talking about stories that just so happen to have military people in it. Because I think of military SF as being the military is central to everything about the story. It's not just like there, right?
Agreed.
That being in the military, actively participating in the military, military everything, that's the story, is
right.
In the military. And I think like some people throw out a lot of – I think we're throwing out examples, and I can't think of any off the top of my head where
– Well, sorry. Go ahead.
I was thinking like I didn't quite agree that John Scalzi's – I kind of didn't want to think of John Scalzi's Old Man's War as military SF only because I didn't feel like – I don't know. There's something about that story that doesn't seem to centralize the military experience to me. But I'm also – when I say that, I feel like I am so way off base when I say that.
Yeah, I have not read Old Man's War, but I was kind of under the impression that – the whole point of it was that it was a military science fiction.
Yeah, I guess I just felt like, I don't know, it's hard, like, because Old Man's War is in some ways a riff on the Forever War. And when you read the Forever War, the way that the military is presented as, like, this centralized, I don't know, maybe it's just the way that he dealt with it, and maybe it's like, I need to reread the Old Man's War, and I'm realizing that I'm just way off, let's just move on. But anyway, the thing I wanted to challenge her on was she says that when women are presented, particularly in the Western form, that they are often voided of feminine agency by making that their presentation is like they're like one of the boys. And I only challenge this because while I don't disagree that the one of the boys mentality is there, I think that she's coming from a perspective that is attaching this treating gender as a physical construct as the same as the behavioral construct, which I think are so vastly different things that, in fact, the behavioral construct is not stable by any stretch of the imagination, where I would think the physical construct is more stable, not necessarily fully stable, but certainly like it's a lot simpler to say that person's a woman, that person's a man, that person is a hermaphrodite, and that person's transgender. Like, you know what I mean? But with when we talk about behavior, I don't feel that behavior, like you can say this person is a woman because of the way they act, because there are always going to be exceptions to that, and that even there's no way we could pinpoint what is feminine behavior. I don't know what that is. I don't know what masculine behavior is.
I think you can pinpoint what feminine behavior is in terms of how women are portrayed in most of fiction, at least classic fiction. Which is weaker, better manners,
emotional,
or
like
sensitive,
that, yeah.
Emotional. All of those things are kind of part and parcel of how women are portrayed. And though I see where you're coming from, I think, and I mean, obviously women are not, that isn't all what being a woman is. I am not necessarily all of those things, and men are not necessarily none of those things. But within the context of fiction and how women are portrayed in fiction, there definitely is, I think, a segregation of the two roles, except when it comes to military science fiction. I completely agree with her on this, you know, and I'm coming at this as a fan of the Honor Harrington series. I've read every single book. Love them. I'm madly passionately in love with this series of books because it is one of the few series where you have a strong female character who in the beginning actually also portrays some of that, if you know, slightly more effeminate. She's definitely a woman. But in her relationship with others. It's not even necessarily so much as the portrayal of the character. It's more in the portrayal of the female character's relationships with other characters. So you would have a female in, you know, a unit of soldiers. Well, that woman is not treated as a sexual, you know, being or as the sensitive being, but treated as, you know, one of the guys, the buddy, the one that you can drink and smoke with and curse with and talk about other chicks with.
Yeah, I see where, I mean,
still capable of having the feminine side, but that feminine side is not really taken into the context of the relationship with the men in the unit.
I guess my challenge to that would be when we are talking about a military unit let's just assume we're talking about military unit in a moment of war, right?
Right.
That to me, it doesn't seem altogether relevant in the heat of battle or in a military campaign for one to express qualities that go beyond being aggressive, being violent, being willing to follow orders without question. All of these kinds of things, which I think sometimes get associated with masculine behaviors, which seem to me to be more just human behaviors. That it seems to me like there is no time for what people might call like the feminine aspects. Well, I don't really know what those are, but it doesn't seem like this is a context in which those things are necessarily relevant.
I happen to agree with you on that, because I think when she tends to say, you know, that when she that the girl must be one of the boys to be taken seriously, is her quote often. That's how it works. What you see is more of a compartmentalization of that female character. So in situations when she's dealing primarily with the soldiers, she might be one of the boys, but she is also at other times a distinctly feminine character. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I think that's probably true to any combat situation. I think men are probably less childish, immature, stupid in a combat situation than they would be when hanging out with someone.
No, that's not true.
I would hope that would be true.
No, I'm sorry. You know how I know that's not true? Because we just had that case of where those guys were pissing on bodies.
Oh, granted. But that's actually... I'm talking about in a specifically combat situation. That wasn't even a combat situation. That's men being those are boys being freaking idiotic boys.
You think that hasn't happened before, that they've desecrated bodies?
No. I think it's happened consistently. I think it's happened for generations. I do not think that is basically what I'm saying is that men, I'm sure, at least in direct combat situations, are capable of being non-childish idiots. Just as women are capable of being non-emotional drama queens.
Well, I would think that maybe because if we're talking a combat situation, then we're talking about a very specific situation where, like, your options are you got to complete your mission and not die. Those are really, that's it.
Right.
So perhaps there's...
During downtime, I suppose that's a slightly different scenario.
Well, it is, actually,
if you want
to know.
I mean, it is. It is a completely different situation. Usually, especially directly after a battle, there's that whole endorphin crash and whatnot. But and I will admit that it's true. The majority of women that I've seen portrayed in military science fiction do still tend in even... post-combat or pre-combat situations when they're kind of, you know, shooting the shit or whatever, still tend to kind of act in that one of the boys sort of... Let's look at Battlestar Galactic, for instance. Yeah. Who's the strongest female character in that?
Depends on what you consider to be the strongest. I mean, you probably would
Who's in a military situation?
Well, they're both in military situations. They're just very different militaries. Carl Thrace is who you're thinking of, though.
Yes.
Okay.
Starbuck, right? That's Starbuck.
Starbuck, Cara Thrace, yeah.
Yes. Starbuck, right? Mm-hmm. When she is in personal situations, most of the time, she's portrayed as more masculine, period.
I don't buy it as necessarily inherently masculine. I just don't see behavior as gendered.
Okay, I agree that behavior isn't necessarily gendered. At least inherently gendered. I do think it's culturally inherent, if that makes sense. Culturally trained.
Well,
and
yeah, because we tell ourselves.
Culturally represented.
Yeah.
Now, this is kind of my issue with this whole Liz Krauts. Is it Liz Kraut? Did I just say that right? No, not Kraut. Burke. Liz Burke's article.
You just called her Liz Kraut.
I'm sorry. I'm getting my names mixed up. Okay. I think my biggest problem with not so much Liz Burke's article, but the response to the article is that I think her largest complaint was that these science fiction authors, people who are supposed to extrapolate on the present and foresee a possible future, or just foresee a possible future in which things that are not true necessarily today become true in the future or whatever. She's looking at these science fiction authors and going, these people lack a distinct imagination, just distinctly lack imagination. If they can't come up with, I mean, we were just talking about, you know, gender stereotypes being culturally trained.
Mm-hmm.
These people aren't even able to see a future in which a culture might not train men and women to have such broad differences in personality.
Yeah.
And that's what really bothered me about the responses to this article is that when people did kind of tackle that issue, they basically said, oh, yeah, because it's not possible now, it will never, ever, ever be possible. No
yeah.
matter what type of culture there might be, all cultures will be forever sexist yeah. douche nozzles.
Okay. Well, that gets to my segue, which I wrote a little thing. Which I think would go perfectly for this, which is called The Amusing World of Comments, in which a man gets banned from commenting on Tor.com for things we don't get to see because the moderators prevented certain things from seeing the light of day, namely Tom Kratman, who apparently has a few problems with the women folk.
Yes.
And, well, we could go... I don't even know where to start. This guy basically flooded the comments with what amounts to the most sexist, sometimes racist, but mostly just the most sexist, overtly sexist bullshit masqueraded around, like, half-fat. It's the brilliant sort of lie, you know, the kind of lie where it's like you tell a little bit of truth so that the rest of the lie kind of, like, sticks. That's kind of what he's done, is he's like, you know, well, I was in the military, and look at these individual incidences where my point about women not being good for the military is true, and then he uses that as a basis for why it'll never be, like you said, which of course is, let me just say something, bullshit.
Yeah,
it's bullshit.
Exactly.
For
he
a number of reasons.
He essentially takes his experiences, which are culturally filtered experiences in the first place. He obviously was kind of trained to be a sexist ass, in my opinion, probably, and then joined the military, which tends to be a largely sexist organization, particularly back when he was first in the military. And he takes those experiences, which are very much culturally defined, and he says, these are truth with a capital freaking T.
Yep.
Because they are truth with a capital T, nothing will ever, ever change that. There is no possible future in which my experiences, though culturally and, you know, very much time-defined, generationally defined, that there's no other way. That my way is the highway sort of view of a future, which basically says to me that he's got to be one of the worst science fiction writers ever.
He's, well,
saying.
We've already agreed we were going to bank one of his book, Our Torture Literature Books. I think somebody made a really brilliant response to his point. And this person was, let me look at the name, Lay DB. I'm not sure who that is in real life. But in any case, they said this to essentially the argument you're pointing out about Kratman is, every time everyone protests that it is impossible, can't be done, no siree, bob, it is impossible that black men can serve in the military. Okay, maybe black men can serve, but it's impossible that they can serve in mixed units with white men. Okay, maybe they can serve in mixed units, but it's impossible that gay men can serve. Okay, maybe gay men can serve, but only if they don't tell us they're gay. Okay, maybe they can tell us they're gay, but it's impossible, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? And this is the same kind of argument we're getting. It's like, okay, there may be very sound, like, scientific reasons for why women are not necessarily perfectly designed for combat. Like, I'm talking frontline combat, right? Where we're talking, you know, first responders. There may be perfectly legitimate reasons for that. Perhaps some of them physical, some of them psychological. I don't know. I'm not a scientist, and I'm not studying this stuff. A psychologist would probably be more appropriate.
Well, the best part is that usually when they say that they're psychologically, you know, incapable of doing something, give it 10 years and they go, oh, well, maybe we were wrong about that.
Okay, well,
but go ahead.
Fair enough. But in any case, let's just assume, for the sake of argument, that women are, generally speaking, physically incapable of the rigors of frontline combat and psychologically not prepared.
Okay.
Right? Let's just, for the sake of argument, let's just make that. Right. It is still completely fallacious, specious, whatever the word is I'm looking for, to make the argument that that cannot change over time, right? The argument may be valid for the time being, but the fact of the matter is we can solve any physical differences between men and women. Generally speaking, we will be able to solve that probably within the next 10 to 15 years with all sorts of exoskeletons and other stuff, which will already be helping people to exceed the capacities of the human body anyway, right? I have no doubt that in 15 to 20 years, we could probably come up with pills that would solve most of the psychological stresses of war, at least in the temporary, right? Though, I mean, the reality is, it's like we can't say for certain what happens in the next 20 years. I mean, good Lord, look what Viagra did to old crusty guys. I mean, come on. People thought that impotence was like, that's it. Well, you're old and your dinky doesn't work anymore. That's it.
Right.
And then the
and
blue pill.
I think that's what is one of the most hilarious things about Kratman's argument in the threads is that he argues that, oh, yeah, well, that, you know, the physical issues might be dealt with in books, but that's just a MacGuffin. Oh, yeah. And the psychological issues, oh, that might be dealt with. Oh, but that's just another MacGuffin, because I believe in the capital T truth. And therefore, any possible vision, any possible answer to those questions that might plague us now, and that's debatable. It really is still hugely debatable. Any answers to those problems are just – he literally comes out and says it's fantasy. Don't write science fiction, because those MacGuffins are fantasy. They're not possible, because I have told the capital T truth. And there is no answer to these questions. There is no way that women can ever serve in the military believably.
Can I refute his argument?
Oh, please do, because it's, well, granted, it's not that hard to refute.
You went robot-y again.
I'm sorry. I don't know why.
Are you sure your daughter went off the internet?
Yeah, she's definitely not on the internet.
Are you sure?
Just start talking, and then hopefully it'll be gone by the time I respond.
It's still there.
Well, I don't know why.
Anyway, so I would refute it this way. If you take the whole idea that it only takes MacGuffins to solve the physical constraints, well, then clearly the U.S. military, which is working on exoskeletons, is a giant MacGuffin.
Yes.
It's a giant MacGuffin.
DARPA. Those crazy people.
I know. It doesn't make any – this is a guy who claims to be on the up and up with the military, and he's like proudly a military man. I'm like, you don't even realize what your own military is. You write military science fiction and you don't know what they're up to? That would be like saying like, well, I'm a literature professor of contemporary literature, but I don't really know what's been published in the last 150 years. Like, what? It's ridiculous. Like, this is the most absurd argument. And of course, he bases this on a number of like really ridiculous philosophical nonsense beliefs. I mean, he argues, for example, that racism is learned behavior.
Innate.
Does he say innate? Oh, I wrote down learned. I must have got that wrong.
Yeah, we believed that racism is learned because it is learned. It's not something that you just suddenly pop out of the womb and you're a racist.
Okay, I think that...
Sorry.
I give him a sort of on that, only because of this. I think that depends on how we define racism.
Yes.
Because if we define racism in a very broad context, then certain aspects of racism as a non-behavior are true.
Yes.
Innate things like babies. Yes. We know babies are able to differentiate their parents' racial makeup, and they actually will not like somebody who doesn't look like their parent. The things like that are, but
hence
I would
why
not define
babies are afraid of beards if their daddy doesn't have a beard.
Right, but I don't necessarily ascribe that to racism as I would define racism, which is deliberately acting out on what I conceive as normal noticing of difference.
Well, there's the only thing that's innate in terms of like the whole racist fear is that fear of the other. There is some innate fear of other in all species, really.
That's true.
It comes down to establishing norms based on that, what is in the beginning, just it's kind of a base fear. It's not like a overwhelming, oh my God, run away, into the world sort of fear. It's just a slight mistrust. It's only when that mistrust is consistently hammered in by cultural teaching that it becomes racism.
Right. And that's why I say that racism...
Which is why it is. You know, you can kind of give them a little teeny piece of it, but you really can't give them all of it.
Right, which is why I say that racism for me is the acting out.
Yes.
Because I don't think there's anything inherently wrong. I mean, if there's something wrong with it, with like noticing someone's different and maybe having those feelings of like they're the other.
Right.
But I think it takes a greater human being to notice a difference and go, that is wrong, I can't react on that, kill it.
Yes.
And then move on. Because the reality is all human beings are, if we
take not even just kill it, but treat it very much differently from myself and never give it the same rights.
Do you mean that the feeling?
The feeling.
Okay.
Yes.
I was like people, I was like, wait, Jen.
No.
I need to be real clear what you meant there. That's not his larger point. His larger point, which is related to this behavior issue, is he says that sexual attraction is largely innate, which I believe is true. It is sexual attraction. Hold on.
Yes.
Attraction is innate. Like I am attracted to a member of the opposite sex because I believe that I was just born that way.
Right.
And if I were gay, I would just be born gay. He probably doesn't believe that. I'm going to assume.
No, of course not.
But in any case.
Probably inferior in his mind too. So.
Right. But in any case. But he also says that how people act based on sexual attraction is only sort of kind of learned, but that we also cannot control behavior. Hold on, let me finish this. So basically what he's suggesting by his argument that we should just expect that the fact that 30% of women in the military have been raped and that 90% have been sexually harassed, that we should just accept that.
Yes, we should. Because men can't control themselves.
Right. Men can't control their
urges. Hence why we should all be wearing the hijab.
And I would like to prove this point invalid by way of an illustration, if I may, Jen.
Oh, please do. This is one of my favorite illustrations, if I know where you're going with it.
I don't know if that's where I'm going. No.
Okay, just go ahead.
Anyway, okay. So recently you and I shared a hotel room.
We did.
Well, not recently. I should say quite a while ago, but it was recent by certain human being standards.
Yes.
We were at the Eaton Convention together, and we shared a hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to contain myself while you were fully clothed.
It's miraculous.
I know. It was really hard, but I managed to hold back. I held back, and I even held back when you got intoxicated.
We're half naked. Half the time.
Well, you totally ruined it. I was going to get there. You were in your bathrobe at one point, and I almost broke down and just ripped it off, Jen. I almost did, but I managed to contain it.
That's shocking.
I know.
I mean,
you just.
I don't think that's possible. I mean,
know, you expected
male.
Me to rape you, right?
I did. I completely expected it. That's actually the only reason that I shared a hotel room with you. Because I'm a woman, and I expect to be raped at all times by
when
every man I meet.
Close quarters with a man. Yeah.
And, yeah. So, there, world. I knew exactly where you were going, and that's why I said I loved it. It's one of my favorite examples, because it's like one of the easiest ways to just be like, seriously, people, I don't know if you know this, but women have male friends who they don't plan on sleeping with
or getting raped by.
Shocking. Or get raped by. I know, it's amazing. But in Kratman's
magic world
mind, you're probably gay, so that's why you didn't rape me.
Oh, okay. But that would make sense. If I'm gay, that would imply that I was born gay.
Oh, no, you chose to be gay.
But how did I choose to be gay? I chose to be gay because I didn't try to rape you?
Yes, that was your choice right there.
Oh, got it.
Right.
We're being a little unfair, but it's an amusing point.
It goes to the absurdity of the argument, because it really is straight up a completely absurd argument on Kratman's part. And again, it goes to the absolute tininess of his imagination,
mm-hmm.
and of many other people on this message thread. He was not the only one that said, oh, well, you know, yeah, I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, well, I mean, he wasn't.
Wait, what? Really? You don't see that ever, ever being a possibility that women could serve in the military.
Openly, in any context, completely integrated.
Right. It's totally impossible. And even if they did serve, they could never serve in like a leadership role. That's totally not feasible.
That's actually been proven false, by the way.
Obviously. And definitely could not serve in a combat role. Ever.
Ever. Yeah.
There is no science fictional possibility of that at all.
And we should, of course, and his argument is, of course, that we should expect that we're just going to get rape and sexual harassment because sexual behavior cannot be controlled, as he would argue, by the male species.
I think that's what cracks me up about this, is that even if you go with what he says, is that, you know, sexual attraction and, you know, is innate, not just sexual attraction, but the sexual behavior is innate. Even if you go with that, if you take the human species out, like maybe 5 or 6, 10, 20 more generations, that's not even possible to get rid of.
But what is not possible? I'm sorry, clarify.
The innateness of sexual behavior is so innate that evolutionarily speaking, we'll never get rid of it.
Oh, okay. And that's his argument, you're saying?
That's what he seems to be saying. I mean, because if you think about it, okay, fine. If you even go with the argument, go, okay, that's true. Right now, sexual behavior is innate. I'll pretend that I agree with that. But in his mind, because he's really kind of dim, not particularly creative,
no,
probably
he's not.
Does not believe in evolution, and this is why his argument is, you know, why there's a capital T.
Yeah.
Because in his mind, you could not take the human species out 100 generations and not have innate sexual behavior ever disappear.
Even though in probably something like 10, 20 years, we'll be able to genetically manipulate human beings.
Exactly.
And get rid of bad genes,
mm-hmm.
essentially. But that's not going to happen.
The asexuality is a fluke. That's... yeah.
I guess it depends how you define a fluke. Does he mean that asexuality is, like, very rare? In which case, I would...
It's a mistake.
Oh, is that what he... If he means fluke is in a mistake, then... Well, I guess that
there is no purpose evolutionarily for a person to be asexual.
Well, that's bullshit.
Or a species.
Actually, I do have a good reason. You want to know what that reason is?
What?
Population fucking control.
I know. Isn't it fabulous?
There are seven. What was the last count? Like, are we at 7.5 billion people yet?
Mm-hmm.
We're really up there. We're like breeding like fucking cockroaches right now.
Okay. Yes.
The fact of the matter is that if evolution is true, which it is, I don't know if he believes it, although you quoted him as using evolution, so...
No. That was not a quote. But I have to believe that he probably does not believe in evolution because of the fact that, in his view, now sexual behavior is innate. And also in his view, in the future, sexual behavior will remain innate.
Oh, okay. Well, then...
Therefore, he cannot possibly believe in evolution.
Right. Well, then, of course he
does. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Right.
And the fact of the matter is that evolution is, I mean, that's one really, really strong theory, I think, for why we've seen a rise in homosexuals lately, is that homosexuality is a mutation in the same way that all things is a mutation. It's a mutation that's always existed, but now that from a genetic standpoint, there are too fucking many of us, and evolution, our genetic makeup knows this. It knows that there are too many of us, and it's responding to overpopulation based on the environment, etc., by basically getting rid of us as reproductive agents. Because essentially, I mean, in very real terms, gay couples by physical nature can't reproduce. The fact that we have culture that gets around that is a totally different idea.
Specifically, I mean, in a lot of species, the whole point of homosexual behavior is to take up the raising of the young because there's an overabundance and the parents are absent. Yeah. And in our culture, I think that's highly appropriate and necessary.
Of course it is. I mean, whatever. I was completely just dumbfounded when I saw this, and I was wondering what we were going to talk about today, and I knew as soon as I saw it, I was like, well, we're going to talk about this, which is, you know, we're not, like, this show isn't a political show, but at the same time, it's like, there's no way we can talk about this without it being political, because
I'm sorry, there really isn't, I suppose. I mean, it's interesting, because she actually mentions how military science fiction, by definition, tends to be more conservative because it's dealing with a military structure.
Which is conservative in and of itself because it's adverse to change.
Right. Which is proved by most things. So if you look at it from that standpoint, yes, it's also true that the majority of military science fiction writers tend to have more conservative politics. Elizabeth Moon being a prime example. I don't think that's necessary. I don't think that's necessary, though. And I don't think it's necessary to... I don't think conservative politics are necessarily sexist. And that's what drives me crazy about this entire subject.
Yeah, and
politics
really...
in general is that there are certain things that people have associated with conservative politics, which piss me off, because, to be honest, I could probably be conservative if there weren't some of those kind of givens. You got to be sexist, you got to be anti-gay, you got to be evangelical. I mean, like, there's this
racist.
Whole kind of gay, racist, you know. I'm sorry. Yes, I realize that not all conservatives are racist, sexist, or any of the above.
Right, but if you follow that what we're seeing in the Republican debates right now, which are essentially racist tenets, and if those are givens in order for somebody to be elected as a... Yeah.
Right. And so those things tend to get injected into military and science fiction. And obviously the thing that we're focusing on today is sexism, but older military science fiction is definitely grossly, grossly sexist.
Yeah, and I give that
older military science fiction. Actually, older science fiction period.
Some of it is.
Older military science fiction.
I give it somewhat of an out,
golden age of military. Yeah.
Because it came from a different period. That doesn't mean that saying
it's
that it's not
relevant.
Sexist.
Right. But it was culturally, it's culturally tied, you know, and generationally tied. So fine.
But it hasn't changed. That's the problem.
Exactly. And when you look at the fact that the number of countries that have fully integrated militaries, And I'm sorry, but they're not having any problems. It goes back to that whole argument of why gays should be allowed to serve openly in the military. Why? Because the ones that do don't have any freaking problems.
Well, there are certainly, I think there are no issues. There are certainly
Shouldn't say no problems, but there aren't any problems that necessarily affect combat readiness, which is usually the concern.
Right, the effectiveness of the military, morale, etc. And yet, surprisingly, these militaries
function
fairly well. And of course, Krautmann would say, well, these other militaries are second rate. And I was like, well, everybody's military is second rate compared to ours. But that's because we spend more on our military than practically any other freaking country in the world.
And yet we can't afford basic things like flak jackets for our
military. Well, yeah.
But that's beside the point. I'm sorry. I was. We have kind of run the handle to completely political here. It is frustrating, though, for me as a female reader of science fiction and a lover of military science fiction, because I'm my background with military science fiction, I've read a lot of it. I love it. It is one of my favorite things. I have an uncle who has a degree in military history, and I'll grant you my grandfather was a conscientious objector, and so I have a kind of a love-hate relationship with the military. But my husband was also in the military, and I absolutely, utterly respect the military as a structure. And I respect the people in it and who choose to serve. And I knew some freaking crazy-ass women who were in the military. And amazingly, didn't affect the functioning of any of the units they were in. Shocking, I know.
Yeah, and I mean, we got to close this out. But I wish there was
more. Yeah, yeah. I'm just saying that I wish I saw more respect of women. I do not necessarily agree with Liz Burke in the fact that she says that they are the only way that they can be in the military is if they're treated as one of the boys, she sees it as kind of a bad thing. I don't necessarily agree with that.
Yeah, I only,
but
I have issues with, I think that the more pressing issue with that is the fact that women are, at least in the U.S. military, and I don't know what the statistics are in other militaries, but women are not just routinely sexually harassed, but routinely raped, and that when they are raped and there's a conviction, something like 62% of those convictions have no prison time whatsoever. There are things like reprimands, getting demoted. That to me is, if I raped somebody, if I had raped you in our hotel room, Jen, in our imaginary scenario where I couldn't control myself,
you'd go to prison for the rest of your life or be murdered by me.
Probably the latter, but.
I think it's a topic that could be tackled by science fiction writers. You know, this is, I think it could be treated respectfully. I mean, with things like not the book, but the movie of, Starship Troopers, the sexuality is divorced from the situation, which I don't necessarily see as a bad thing, especially in a near future human civilization. I think they could tackle the realities of women in the military today, culturally, because it is completely a cultural symptom,
sure.
not necessarily a human symptom. I think those issues could be very interestingly tackled in science fiction.
And some have done it. I mean, Joe Haldeman took a stab at the integration question when he wrote The Forever War, which keeps coming up, and it's a classic. And that doesn't necessarily mean that the way he dealt with it was necessarily non-sexist or that it was necessarily the right way, but it was one way to – how do you integrate these people? Well, okay, one way to do it is, well, anybody can hump anybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you really don't get a choice who you bunk with, and you kind of like it's a free for all. You just aren't allowed to have relationships, but you can boink your bunk mate.
I think it's hilarious, and that's what's great about science fiction. He gave a solution. He gave a possible solution.
I don't think
it works out in the book, but
no, it actually fails.
That's good. I mean, that's good that he explored a solution and he came to a conclusion on it. Because essentially what science fiction can be when it's at its most powerful is a sort of philosophical treatise. And that's what fascinates me about science fiction most of the time. And I think, you know, military science fiction tends to be a little bit less philosophical. Does it need to be, though? No. I think it could probably be more.
What I don't get is, like, if these guys really, like, if they see this as such an issue, why aren't they, like, it seems to me, like, if this is the issue that women, for whatever reason, like, it's too hard to integrate them, right? Right. There's too big of a problem. Why isn't it that we're not seeing more fiction about, like, a society that is trying to integrate despite the fact that there's a lot of opposition and that there are perhaps perceived issues with that integration?
Exactly, because, like, that's what science fiction is. If they have such a problem with it, they could use their, you know, creative little science fictional lines and write some freaking science fiction about it. But no, they just have to go, nope, I have told the truth.
Yeah, I mean, it's
just
kind of...
my way is the only way. It's sad.
It's a little sad. I mean, it kind of makes me, you know, I don't know. Like, I'm writing a series of stories, and I mentioned this on the Twitters, that this is why I was really happy with my Memphis universe, because the way that I've solved the gender issue is essentially that it's not about people, like, it's not the physical. There's no physical issue now, that in fact all of the machines of war are fully integrated into the physical person. And are designed, the AIs are designed to make sure the physical person can keep operating the rest of the machine. So so there's no issues with psychological questions, because the machine just dopes you up and gets your reaction times back to normal. There's no question of the physical, because the machine does all of the physical work. You just move the machine. I mean, all of these questions are sort of answered by this. And while he could say that's the MacGuffin, I'm like, well, yeah, but that's 2,000 years, that's not a MacGuffin. I'm sorry,
exactly.
But it's not.
Exactly. That's what science fiction is. Science fiction is coming up with, and I'm sorry, your MacGuffins are completely plausible. If you're creating this within a science fictional world, those things are totally plausible.
I know they are.
It's not fantasy. You can look at we're already doing that. That's what freaking Viagra is, but opposite. That's what Prozac. Prozac is exactly what you are introducing into your Memphis world. It's essentially like a really super powerful Prozac. And guess what they feed a lot of combat troops?
Prozac?
Exactly. Or similar endorphin, not endorphin blocking, but what are they called? Serotonin blockers.
Right. They give them all sorts of stuff. I mean, during World War II, they tried to give them anti-nausea pills for their flight over when they were doing the paratrooping during World War II, and also when they were in the boats.
And what are they giving their pilots these days? They're giving them all kinds of drugs in order to be able to stay awake and alert for periods of time in situations that can be, for long stretches of time, completely boring and prone to putting people to sleep. So they shoot them full of drugs. This is what the military does. So creating a uniform, it's not that hard to foresee a future in which those problems are solved by drugs or other solutions.
Or if not completely solved, that at least we have come to solutions which are working for the moment, but which may have repercussions later.
Exactly.
Like with Haldeman, there's a point in it when they drug the hell out of them as a means for getting them to basically be completely unafraid. I drug the hell out of the guys, and they become unafraid, and they just basically run out there and they just shoot the hell out of the enemy, and it takes all inhibitions away. They just
And I'm gonna assume that they learn that that's a really stupid thing to do to your military troops.
It's stupid, sorta. They find out in it that it works, kinda, but that the ramifications for that are far graver, because you end up breaking your soldiers psychologically. They just they break down, or sometimes the drugs are too powerful and they make people like not care enough for their own welfare to be able to like make the balance between bravery and just damn stupidity.
Right. Peter Watts is actually going to be tackling that in his next book as well. So I think he's essentially writing a military science fiction. So that should be interesting to see. And it tackles the issue of psychological trauma. And I believe he's got women and men serving in his military. So it'll be really interesting to see how he deals with, you know, those sort of situations, both sexual and psychological. So,
excellent. Cool.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Anyway.
Yeah, so we should probably close out. I think we've run a lot longer than I thought we would.
That's okay. I mean, you and me, we love it when people start being douche nozzles.
It's true. We We really do. Cool. So if anybody wants to let us know what they think, they can do that in a number of ways. You can just leave a comment on the blog.
SkippyandFanty.com.
Yep, we got a .com. Suckas, what? Yeah. Or you can send us a tweet. I'm not sure how that'll work, but you can send us a tweet.
Twitter.com/SkippyandFanty.
You can send us an email thingy.
SkippyandFanty@gmail.com.
Or there's, of course, the Google Plus.
Shawnee Jen.
And we do have a Facebook page, which we constantly forget, and you just look up Skiffy and Fanny, it'll show up.
Yeah, it has the same stuff that's on Twitter, though, so it's up to you, depending on how you like to follow things.
Yeah, but if you're a Facebook user and you'd rather follow it that way rather than on Twitter, that's perfectly fine. And, of course, Facebook does allow you to actually comment a little bit more in depth, so.
It does, so use it.
So, yeah, so we're happy to hear people's opinions on the kinds of things we've said, controversial or no.
And Tom Kratman, if you would like to respond to us, please do.
I'll leave Jen all of that because I got enough on my plate. Grad school is hard.
Yes. Anyway, have a good week, folks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Our new intro music is Time Flux by Revolution Void. You can check them out at freemusicarchive.org.
Another weak human afraid to face death.
I fart in your general direction.
France, different planet.
The Force will be with you. Always.
End of line.